Before that, Simon Cox presents Club Class.
Imagine a club where presidents, prime ministers and international bankers rub shoulders and where royalty's on hand to make sure everyone gets along. Where the people running wars, the markets and Europe say what they never dare to in public. Welcome to the world of Bilderberg, the most exclusive and secretive club in the world.
When you're doing good, you do it in the sunshine. When you do evil, you do it in the darkness.
I, of course, am absolutely forbidden from discussing anything that has been said on any specific subject by any individual.
And every time I raise the issue of Bilderberg, I get sent from pillar to post.
I don't really know how conspiracies act, actually. I think if Bilderberg were a conspiracy, I wouldn't be talking to you.
Bilderberg meets just once a year. Its cast list is a who's who of transatlantic political and corporate power. There's one important rule. No one who goes is able to say what was discussed or even who was there. For almost 50 years, Bilderberg has operated unnoticed. Even now, few people know it exists. Jim Tucker's trying to change that.
If 120 film stars or 120 football players went behind closed doors for 3 days, all newspapers would bust their butts trying to find out what happened. If 120 of the world's most powerful men, leaders in international finance, heads of state, high officials of the U.S. government, get together behind closed doors, armed guards for 3 days, why is there no curiosity?
Jim is a veteran right-wing journalist who's been tracking Bilderberg for the last 2 decades. He's convinced that it meets in secret because it's got something to hide.
Well, when you're doing good, you do it in the sunshine. When you do evil, you do it in the darkness. For some reason, it's critical that the world not know what transpires behind those closed doors.
You really think they're evil?
Yes.
Conspiracy theorists like Jim Tucker believe Bilderberg is a shadow government secretly trying to control the world. We wanted to find out the truth. This year's Bilderberg was being held in mid-May, and we wanted to be there. The organisers had promised to tell us where it was being held, but Jim alerted us first about a hotel in Versailles.
Rien au Palais Versailles, Patricia. Bonjour, monsieur, vous avez?
Bonjour, réservation, s'il vous plaît?
Oui.
Service réservation, Fabienne, bonjour.
Bonjour, I'd like to reserve a room, if possible, on the 15th and 16th of May.
I'm sorry, but the hotel is closed for this date.
It's closed?
Yes.
Right. What, is it a conference or something? Or I've tried to book before.
Well, closure.
You're just closed?
Yeah.
Is this the Bilderberg Conference Hotel?
No, I don't know what is the Bilderberg Conference. So.
Right. But there's no one staying there. I mean, the hotel is just going to be closed for the whole weekend.
Yeah.
Thank you, anyway.
You're welcome, sir.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We weren't the only people who were interested in Bilderberg. Mainstream politicians have now begun asking tough questions about the organisation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tomorrow in Versailles, as far as I can tell, the meeting of Bilderberg will begin. Now, the reason I raise this question is there have been a number of commissioners, Commissioner Monti, Lekkonen...
The Irish Green MEP, Patricia McKenna, presses the European Parliament to find out which of the powerful European commissioners will be at this year's Bilderberg. She's worried about Europe's political elite cozying up with big business for 3 days of secret discussions.
And every time I raise the issue of Bilderberg, I get sent from pillar to post. I should have had a reply on the 25th of April. I still have not got a reply. The Bilderberg meeting is starting at the weekend.
Patricia McKenna is part of the anti-globalisation lobby, who believe the world is run for the benefit of multinational companies. She sees Bilderberg as a useful way for big business to get its own way.
the kind of Europe that they want is basically a Europe which pursues the current policy on free trade, which ignores the criticism of the anti-globalization campaigners around the world, which has a policy that's geared towards multinational capital, the interests of the multinationals, because when you look at it, the people who are taking part in these meetings are key players in the multinational industries, and it's in their interest that the Bilderberg meetings take place.
We arrived in Paris the day that Bilderberg was due to start. We headed straight for the hotel, which we had been told was closed. Police with machine guns now patrolled the perimeter. I headed for the entrance, where smart men in black suits, sunglasses and discreet earpieces were closely checking everyone going into the hotel grounds.
Hi.
I speak just a little
bit. Yeah, I'm from
the
BBC. I've got my press card, but that's... Is this for the Bilderberg conference, is this all the...
Well, it's for the conference, yes.
Right. And is there... there's no chance that we can come in and have a look? I'm from BBC.
I know, but it's not possible you go here.
Right. And there's the whole hotel is closed off, isn't
it? Yes, it's closed. Hotel, closed.
We join the other spectators, a handful of journalists and conspiracy theorists who were explaining to the locals what was going on.
Rockefeller, Rothschild, Wallenberg, Beatrix de Hollande, Catherine Jouot, Avant le GA in Avignon.
Ah, d'accord.
Par
le tribunal. Les finances.
Oui.
Très bien. Merci beaucoup.
C'est très discret, discrétion.
We knew the meeting would be full of bankers and the heads of multinational companies, but spotting them would be tough. There were only a few familiar faces in the fleet of modest Renault hatchbacks ferrying guests into the safety of the hotel.
Okay, here's another one coming. Who's in there? That looks like Ken Clark.
Hi, Ken!
Well, there's Ken Clark just arriving. No, he's not saying anything to us.
No.
He didn't really seem to respond when I called his name. They're checking his he's a bona fide delegate on the list there.
The Queen of Spain?
Is that the Queen of
the
Spain?
The Queen of Spain, yes.
Oh, right.
Sofia.
Ah.
Whew.
For 50 years, Bilderberg has kept its affairs private. There are no public records, and Bilderberg's own archives are embargoed. The only information we can be sure of come from the files of the former Labour leader Hugh Gaitskill, taken during Bilderberg meetings in the 1950s.
Hello? Ah, yes, Hugh Wilford here.
In a drab London University office block, the historian Dr. Hugh Wilford shows me the archive where Gaitskill hoarded everything from the first conference in 1954 at the Bilderberg Hotel in Holland.
Yeah, if I could order some additional items from the Gaitskill papers, please. Some items.
Inside the copious manila folders is everything from the helpful Dutch guide to windmills to Gaitskill's pad with detailed notes about all of the conference speakers. In his letters, Bilderberg's secrecy was laid bare for the first time.
We found this letter. What's this one?
This is from Hugh Gaitskill to his friend and Labour Party colleague Dennis Healey, in which he's telling him about the conference. He describes it as a rather special kind of conference, very hand-picked, with the proceedings private, and ends by saying that he hopes that he'll be able to give Healey further details, but meanwhile, would you please treat the whole matter as absolutely confidential, say nothing about it to anybody.
So, real secrecy from the very beginning.
Yes.
Because you can see when you hear about the way that it's set up, why people have these conspiracy theories.
Yes, now I can might see why that is the case, and the fact that so much secrecy was insisted upon for these early meetings. And yes, I mean, it doesn't necessarily look very good to the, you know, leader of the British Labour Party is consorting with various representatives of the secret services and American capitalists, and doing so in such a clandestine fashion. So yes, I can see why conspiracy theories have sprung up and surrounded Bilderberg.
Bilderberg was set up to strengthen the troubled Atlantic Alliance. For 3 days, Europe and America's elite could meet and iron out any differences in private. Figures from the centre-left, like Gaitskill, have always been a feature at Bilderberg, because big business and the Americans wanted to get them on their side. The conference papers show exactly what was discussed within the secret confines of Bilderberg. What's striking is the degree of consensus reached by those at the meeting on contentious topics like European integration. Here's another interesting, it's another paper from the first one. It's about the European Union. It's interesting here saying, some sort of European Union has long been a utopian dream, but the conference was agreed that it is now a necessity of our times. Only in some form of union can the free nations of Europe achieve a moral and material strength capable of meeting any threat to their freedom.
Yeah.
So this is 50 years ago saying we must have a European Union.
Yes. But again, reflecting the fact that many of the people involved in planning Bilderberg had also played leading roles in getting the European movement going in the late 1940s and early 50s. And the fact the Americans want it so much as well, because they want a stronger Western Europe to resist possible Soviet aggression.
Without Bilderbergers, Europe could be a very different place. From his study of the group, Mike Peters, a sociologist from Leeds Metropolitan University, is convinced that members of Bilderberg helped to conceive, create and establish all of the major European institutions.
The single currency was mooted first by people who were connected with Bilderberg. The sheer wealth and importance of the people who attend Bilderberg suggests that this is one of the most important political forums in the modern world, far more important than the G8, which seems to attract a lot of media attention. The G8 seems to be just a sort of showcase. The number of journalists and academics writing about the G8 dwarfs the number of students of Bilderberg.
It's only in the last few years that British MPs have started asking awkward questions about Bilderberg. In 1999, Tony Blair was questioned about Bilderberg by the Liberal Democrats. His written reply reveals little. "I've been told that Bilderberg usually invites a number of people from government," he said, "but there's no formal representation by the UK. What the Prime Minister fails to mention is that both he and the Chancellor were at Bilderberg when they were in opposition. The Tory MP, Nicholas Winterton, believes no one in government wants to talk about the group.
I asked, I think, two or three questions and got a totally negative reply. In my view, it's quite clear that nobody wishes to talk about Bilderberg and those that take part in their meetings.
What bothers Eurosceptics like Nicholas Winterton is the Europhile tendency of Bilderberg. He wants to know what elected European politicians are saying in their lengthy private discussions with powerful, unelected, unaccountable corporations.
I'm not saying that what they're doing is illegal. I'm saying it is somewhat sinister, and bearing in mind they're such powerful people, why are they not prepared to be more open about the subjects that they discuss and perhaps even the decisions that they reach following these discussions? Maybe if I get Kenneth Clark on one side one day, I might have a natter in his ear as to why he went, what was discussed, if he's prepared to declare to me what was discussed, and why he actually took a decision to go to such a meeting.
If you do speak to Kenneth Clark, you can ask him for us, because he won't speak to us about it. He wouldn't tell us why he'd been, why he chooses to go, why he's on the steering committee, so he's quite a key member of Bilderberg.
I shall certainly ask him that, and will indicate that I think it's very wrong that a politician is not prepared to be more open when he meets important people at clearly what is an important gathering each year.
Will you let us know what he says?
I suspect I shall get just as rough an answer as you have, and a negative answer, I don't think for a moment, sadly, that he would reveal to me what transpires at these gatherings.
Day two of the conference, and with all the guests inside, we tried to get a peek through the dense foliage of the surrounding parkland. Our guide was Chris Bolin, a photographer for Jim Tucker's Right Wing magazine, who's been to almost as many Bilderberg conferences as our own Kenneth Clark.
It's quite secretive, isn't it, obviously? I mean, look, ahead of us, there's security and then a long driveway, maybe half a mile up to the hotel. I mean, we're not going to get anywhere near it.
What's important with Bilderberg is discretion. They don't want to be identified. That's why when they drive up, they hide their faces. They don't want the public to know that they're attending this meeting. A secretive about it. Why do they not want to be identified with Bilderberg?
Why do you think that is?
Because they know that what they're doing is undemocratic. They know that what they're doing is not proper.
What could they do to make you think it's okay, they're being open, there's nothing sinister going on?
Well, a tiger can't change his spots or whatever. They can't change what they are, and what they are doing is undemocratic, and so they really can't show a different face because that's what they are.
We were one step ahead of the conspiracy theorists. We'd arranged to meet Bilderberg's affable Secretary General, Martin Taylor, outside the conference, and he promised to give us a list of the participants.
Hello there. Hi, I'm Simon Cox.
I'm Martin Taylor.
Thanks for coming
out.
Should
we go somewhere a little bit quieter?
Absolutely. Sure.
I brought you the papers you were looking for.
Oh, right. So
these are the same as the list participants that will be in every participant's pack.
See, quite a fit. Prime Minister? Prime Minister?
We've got a couple
European
of
Commissioner?
Yes.
Do you have many are there many European Commissioners? I'm obviously only on this first page.
We've got a couple this year. We've got Fritz Bolkestein and Pascal Lamy coming. You'll probably find a third man and shame me.
Oh, you got James Wolfenson there, President of the World Bank. Oh, Paul Wolfowitz.
Paul will be coming later on. He's not here today.
Right, right.
It's very good of him to come because he obviously has immense pressures on his time, but he was a member of the Steering Committee of Bilderberg for many years.
So will you be looking out for people in Britain or in Europe who you think they may be interesting people to ask to the next Bilderberg meeting? Or?
Yes. Perhaps not as hard as I should be, but I mean, people come to one's attention in all sorts of ways. I mean, sometimes you see them somewhere at a meeting and they're very bright, and sometimes you read something they've written.
So how would I get to Bilderberg?
Oh, just keep on the way you're going. I don't think there'd be any problem.
And it's useful to know who's coming. What about the agenda? What are you going to be talking about?
Since Bilderberg's raison d'etre is the transatlantic relationship, and that's been somewhat in the news. I mean, you won't be surprised that we're talking about not just Iraq, but the whole issue arising from the war.
You have this sort of, I don't know the best way to describe it, a code, I suppose, isn't it, that you don't talk about the meeting.
Just what's called in English Chatham House rules.
Right. If you break those, what happens? You just wouldn't be asked again.
You wouldn't be asked again. What isn't on, and what people know isn't on, is to say, I heard X say this at a panel. Why was very critical of so on and so forth, because if people think that's going to happen, they will clearly be much more careful what they say, and then you're back in the public situation.
We knew who was there, but we still didn't know what they'd said. Getting people to breach Bilderberg's secrecy rule wouldn't be easy. Discretion could be guaranteed from a cast list, including the Governor of the Bank of England, Gordon Brown's special adviser Ed Balls, the Cabinet Minister Lord Williams, Henry Kissinger, and several Prime Ministers. We weren't surprised when they all declined politely to be interviewed.
This is Katharina Poulsen from the Prime Minister's office in Copenhagen. You wrote a letter to the Prime Minister requesting an interview regarding the Bilderberg. The Prime Minister, thank you for your request, but I'm sorry he's not able to participate in your interview. Thank you. Bye.
The message will be erased.
Some of those we contacted sounded scared that we even knew they'd been to Bilderberg. After all, they were now part of the elite, and once you're lucky enough to make club class, you don't want to be thrown back into economy. Eventually, though, some were willing to risk their privileged status and break the Bilderberg code, as long as we
Great.
Didn't name them.
Okay. Many thanks. Many thanks for your help. Bye-bye. Sure. I've just spoken to the first person who has been this year who will actually talk to us off the record and tell us some more details about what was actually discussed at Bilderberg this year. What he has told us is that one of the key
aspects of this year's Bilderberg was the battle between the French and the Americans. The French foreign minister was there, and the deputy defence secretary, Paul Wolfowitz, was there from America, and he said that he was really surprised by how hurt the Americans were. And the depth of feeling. He said their nerves were really raw, that they couldn't even talk about Iraq policy. One of the most shocking comments was from the French Foreign Minister, Dominique de Villepin, who said that if it wasn't for the French and the Pope, that the war on Iraq would have seemed like a war against Islam. De Villepin had also said that if the Americans hadn't said it was about weapons of mass destruction, but in fact it was just about regime change, that maybe the French would have supported them. And obviously, they're fairly incredible comments. If they were said openly anywhere else, they would have been front page news, especially in the French press and internationally. But of course, no one has heard these comments because the whole nature of Bilderberg is that it's secret. One of the other interesting things he told us was that you might expect the politicians to dominate these kind of meetings, but he said that wasn't the case, that there were some of the businessmen there who were very active in the political discussions. What he also said as well was interesting was that the regulars, people on the steering committee, people like Kenneth Clark, Henry Kissinger, they would tend to lead and tend to dominate a lot of the discussions. And what he was surprised at was the tone of just how frank generally all the discussions were. He said it was like just being in a bar or a restaurant, the kind of language and the tone of the discussions. He said it was like being around normal people. What's unique about Bilderberg is that bankers and businessmen get to share the stage with politicians. Other sources told us the financial muscle was depressed and it was the politicians who were to blame. There was a feeling of crisis, was how one source put it. Some businessmen had warned the Americans and Europeans there could be a massive recession or even a trade war unless they stopped arguing. Since Bilderberg, Europe and America has got along much better. A coincidence, according to Bilderberg, but more ammunition for their critics. Getting anyone to speak on the record about Bilderberg was proving tough. After getting the OK from the organisation, the Financial Times economics commentator Martin Wolf agreed to be interviewed, but with certain conditions.
I, of course, am absolutely forbidden from discussing anything that has been said on any specific subject by any individual participant. If you're happy to interview me on that basis, I'm happy to go ahead with an interview, provided we can find a suitable time. Bye.
There'd been a virtual news blackout of this year's conference, in spite of the fact there were journalists present from the New York Times, Newsweek and The Economist, to name but a few. But Martin Wolf, who's a Bilderberg regular, doesn't feel compromised that he can come to such a high-powered meeting, but he can't report what was discussed.
The underlying aim was to make it possible for people who are making top-level decisions and interpreting the world on the two sides of the Atlantic really to understand how other people were actually thinking, as opposed to what they were at that point prepared to tell the press. So the logic is, has always been persuasive. I've always believed that it is obvious there are things people are prepared to say, particularly people in power are prepared to say privately that they cannot say publicly, that it is very important for the people who deal with them to understand how they're thinking, what's the background to what they're doing, rather than just what they're saying for public opinion.
The people we had spoke to who were at the meeting were talking about the very differing opinions of Dominique de Villepin, the French Foreign Minister, and Paul Wolfowitz on Iraq, and you know, a discussion which, if it was in a public forum, certainly in France and probably elsewhere, would have been front page news.
Certainly can't confirm that. Because that was part of the discussion. You know that they were both participants, and you know from their well-known and published opinions that they disagree on quite a large number of matters. So I think the inference you're drawing wouldn't seem an unreasonable inference to draw. Perhaps at the end of it, both of them understood, all the people involved will have understood better what the other actually thinks.
What unites Bilderberg's critics is concern over top corporate figures being allowed such unfettered access to senior politicians with no public scrutiny. Back at his day job as chairman of WH Smith,
I get the opportunity to once again question Martin Taylor. How does he persuade powerful bankers and businessmen to give up their time if they don't have anything to gain?
I've never needed to sell it to anybody, is all I can say. The only reason I've ever heard somebody say that they didn't want to come was that they couldn't on the dates concerned. I mean, people are attracted, I think, by sheer curiosity at being in a group like this and hearing certain things from the horse's mouth, as it were. And I think that the personal relations that are formed there, not in the sense of some ghastly Freemasonry the sort of secret society, not that at all, but it's just the fact that people have a chance to get to each other as individuals rather than as people that they come across in their government or business careers.
Which they don't. I suppose it's not... because what I think the nub of people's worries is not really that you put a lot of politicians together and they have discussions. I mean, they do that
all the time, yes.
But it's when you have senior business figures with politicians in an unaccountable setting, that's what really worries people.
But does anybody among your highly educated and sensitive group of listeners suppose for a moment that these people don't meet all the time anyway?
Well, presumably they don't, otherwise why would Bilderberg exist?
Well, of course they meet all the time, but they meet on an individual basis rather than, 120 in a room together. But, I mean, do you really think that senior business people don't talk to politicians? I mean, it doesn't happen as much, actually, in Britain as in other countries. If you talk to senior politicians in Germany, for example, or senior business people, they're talking twice a week.
Politicians and businessmen may meet regularly, but what's unique about Bilderberg is the calibre of the corporate and political figures gathered together in one place, and most importantly, in private. So are they, as their critics believe, trying to reach collective decisions about issues like Europe?
I mean, there's no such thing as Bilderberg thinking. I mean, we have people from both sides of the political debate. I mean, if you take the two steering committee members from the UK, myself and Ken Clark, I mean, we have diametrically different views on the desirability of British participation in the euro, for example. Generally speaking, there are more people at the Bilderberg conferences who would be in UK terms, highly europhile, but that isn't surprising because the elites on the continent are 90% highly europhile. And I've had some correspondence with people arguing that Bilderberg was actually a machine for getting rid of national sovereignty in the UK. All I can say is I've never seen it.
So, comment I saw that said that if Bilderberg isn't a conspiracy, it certainly acts like one. I think that's an unfair assumption.
Well, I think it's absurd. I don't know. I mean, who's editing? I mean, you've given me a statement taken out of context with which I can't possibly agree. I don't really know how conspiracies act, actually. I think if Bilderberg were a conspiracy, I wouldn't be talking to you this morning.
Martin Taylor may portray Bilderberg as little more than a high-powered talking shop, but to his critics, it would always be an exclusive and secretive club with too much power. Until Bilderberg does the impossible and opens up, that will always be the suspicion. It may not be a global government, but for the world's elite, the discussions they have and the people they meet at Bilderberg must influence the way they run their businesses, their economies, and their countries.
Clubcast was presented by Simon Cox and produced by Richard Varden.